The Guardian.
Hello all, James Richardson here, and before we get started with today's edition of Football Weekly, I'm going to point you in the direction of our sponsor Squarespace. For more about building beautiful websites, go to squarespace.com. And now, on with the show.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Today, big on Champions League, big on Premier League, big on FA Cup quarterfinals. There's dancing on the streets of the Qatari Investment Authority as PSG triumph at Stamford Bridge. Elsewhere, Roma go home and Benfica and Wolfsburg are through. We move on to the Premier League. Will Monday night's Leicester Newcastle beat Ranieri against Rafa? Fox against facts. And what's that big wand waving sparkly stuff all over the humdrum world of football? Why, it's the FA Cup quarterfinals featuring Arsenal and West Ham at Old Trafford and Chelsea Everton and Civil War as the Royals take on the Palace. Wow, we look forward to all of that. Have a look at your post, hear about Palermo getting yet another new manager and more in this Football Weekly Extra. Hey friends, welcome to this Football Weekly Extra. I hope it's not the 52nd podcast that's downloaded for you in the last couple of days. But producer Ben wishes me to say he's sorry, but you can switch your automatic downloads to off. And that'll take care of the problem. Anyway, since we're here, let's talk a little bit of football with Greg Bukowski.
Hi, James.
Hi to you, Greg. Big James Horncastle.
Hello, James.
All right. Yeah. And also Michael Cox.
Hello, James.
Where are you from, Michael?
From
zonalmarking.net.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
Zonalmarking.net. Did you have a piece up on zonalmarking.net today? This is Thursday. About how far PSG can go in the Champions League?
Well, it wasn't on that particular website.
It was
elsewhere on the internet.
What was the answer? How far can they go?
Well, I think last night showed that they are one of the best teams in Europe, I think. Up there, probably in the top four. They've got to the quarterfinals the last couple of seasons. And I think if they don't progress to the semifinals this time around, it will probably be an underachievement.
Who are the other three in the four?
I would say Barcelona, Atletico and Bayern Munich.
Ooh.
If we're talking Champions League, because I think there's an argument for Dortmund, but they're obviously in the Europa League.
Real Madrid not?
No, I think under Zidane they look quite disorganised. Wasn't particularly impressed with them against Roma the other day.
Right. Watching the Champions League coverage this week, I was struck mostly by how much he looks like the bloke in the Assassin video game. Have you seen the trailers for
that?
Oh,
yeah. It's the jacket.
Is it the jacket?
I think so.
Because he's shaving his head now and he does look like he is going to choke someone with a piece of sushi. What do you think of Michael Cox's top four then?
I'd agree with that. Who am I to argue with Michael Cox when he does his calculations?
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
But L'Equipe were getting carried away today. Ooh. On the front page, they had Too Strong, and the inside it was like they were at home. Mm. They made Stamford Bridge like their garden. They were saying that the gap was so pronounced between PSG and Chelsea that it was almost like a Ligue 1 game.
Steady on. It did begin that way though. PSG looked like the kind of European sophisticates that the owners have wanted them to be, and they started so comfortably, and that was probably what let Chelsea get back into the game. That when they scored, they got even more comfortable, got picked in possession, and that's when Chelsea kind of started to play. But yeah, it was extraordinary the way they started the game away in the second leg of a Champions League last 16 game against Chelsea, who should have been absolutely up for it, given it's the main thing that they were going for this season.
Absolutely. Although, of course, they do still have the FA Cup. We'll talk about that in a second. But for a team that's top four, I know they were missing some key midfielders, Michael, but they're a little bit sloppy, whether this is down to the fact that they do have such a comfortable time of it at home.
Yeah, I think I agree with Greg. When they went 1-0 up, they did kind of switch off. And I thought Chelsea did well to get back into the game. They pressed high up and kept robbing the ball, in particular from Thiago Motta. But I thought PSG had probably another gear to go to if required. I thought the second half, they were quite comfortable. And it was a funny kind of tie because they won 2-1 at home, 2-1 away. So two quite narrow victories. But because of the away goals rule, it meant Chelsea needed three goals to progress. So it was a strange kind of tie. As soon as PSG scored the second, that was just game over. And the last half hour was a bit pointless, to be honest.
Also, I mean, you saw that they had Marco Verratti in the stands and they were still able to control the game, not completely. But Ibra said, for example, it was quite a stable performance for them. It wasn't really much in doubt. And yeah, do you look at the substitutions they were then able to make, which Gus Hiddink pointed to in his post-match interview. You know, they brought on Pastore, they brought on Cavani. Just goes to show the kind of strength and depth that PSG have assembled in the last few years.
Mm. Right, Zlatan, you mentioned him. What an excellent season he's having at the age of 34. A lot of people suggesting that when his contract expires with PSG at the end of this season, he might be heading to the Premier League. Is Fergie Lowe asking, would it be sad or brilliant if Ibrahimovic signed for Man United? Because that's a thing, I think. Is it, Greg?
Well, it'd be brilliant for journalists, I imagine. And, you know, the copy that would give them. But I don't know if that is... That could be, you know, there's more comfortable ways Ibrahimovic could perhaps see out his career than at a club. That
depends as well who the manager would be.
A club that, you know, still needs an overhaul, it seems. And he is right at the end of his career. And it might not be good for United to have Zlatan there when they're looking to design a club and pretty much build something again from the bottom up, it seems.
All right. Well, they provide an interesting counterpoint to all those young ones scampering around so efficiently at the moment. Let's see what happens. Let's see what happens. I'm not sure what the hot rumour is about Zlatan's future, but certainly they've now been mentioned, as I think have Chelsea, who won't be in the Champions League next season, one would think. Possibly won't even be in the Europa League, which is probably just as well, since their new manager's so rubbish in Europe. Antonio Conte, he's not...
Qualifying in a semi-final, the semi-final coming in the Europa League, of course. Many people would say that built towards them going to the final last season. They were just accumulating experience, but I'll take your point.
Right, and if he is going there, it looks like he's in for a season, I'm reading, of rebuilding, playing without Hazard next year, although not much change there, perhaps.
550 minutes without a goal now.
Wow.
Personally, I think the rebuilding thing has been slightly exaggerated. Mm. I mean, it's roughly the team that won the league a year ago. They had a disastrous first half of the season, but since the change of manager are unbeaten and have picked up, I think, the second most points in the Premier League behind Spurs. So it's still a pretty good team. If they have to lose Hazard, I'm not sure it would be a big problem, assuming they can get good money for him and reinvest it. Terry might leave, but I imagine that, personally, I think Conte will want to keep him. So I don't think there's much change to be done, really. Make the squad better, a couple of central midfielders maybe, but they've still got a good team, Chelsea.
The recruitment policy needs looking at, though, because, I mean, you look at last night, Costa got injured and they bring on Bertrand Traoré, who's an attacking midfielder, and 20 years old. They leave Remy on the bench. Pato is now, 42 days he's been there, and is he really there? You know, who knows? I mean, you've got 30 players or more on loan at various clubs around Europe as well, and that's the situation they face looking at their bench when their main striker gets injured. That definitely needs somebody to get a handle on it and sort that out, because with all the wealth they've got, they should be much better stocked in the ranks when things do go wrong.
Mm, absolutely. The other Champions League news midweek, Wolfsburg wrapping things up against Ghent.
Yeah,
Andrew
the Schultz. Goal scored by a former Chelsea player.
There you go. Yeah. The clash at the Bernabeu saw another former Chelsea player not scoring goals, repeatedly, Mo Salah. Although Dzeko perhaps the bigger culprit, do you think, in that game? Because Roma...
Yeah, I mean, so many opportunities.
Roma Sprecona.
Sprecona, the wasteful Roma, yes. And they'll come out of that game with regrets, because I think tactically they set up brilliantly for it. They went for a really bold starting lineup, which many thought was suicidal, and instead it yielded so many good chances for them. But Spalletti afterwards very harsh on his players, saying, you know, you've got to change mentality. Can't be satisfied with the fact that you've lost 2-0 home and away. Real Madrid.
For them.
Well, yes, for them. But he was saying that particularly when the first goal went in and then another went in, he feared that it was going to be another one of those nights when they were going to take a 7-1 battering.
It's the first time this season that they've played away in the Champions League and not conceded at least three goals.
Yeah, so it's progress. Yeah.
It is progress. Okay, anyway, Real Madrid goes through, and also Benfica with a fine 2-1 win away at Zenit St. Petersburg. Yeah.
Talisca, my man.
Talisca, your man. Oh, should mention that Ronaldo had a special evening again. There was some debate in this very venue last time we were here about whether he's actually any good.
40th goal of the season.
Yeah, and sets up James Rodriguez. Yeah, he's doing all right. Chelsea, anyway, they have a quarterfinal with Everton to try and cheer themselves up with. That's at Goodison on Saturday. Ooh, and what's the injury news here? Because Costa going off in the PSG game, Greg. What's the latest?
I don't think they've done that. I've not heard what the result of the scan is yet, but I'm... I mean, he looked like he wouldn't be available at the weekend. Very much doubt he will be.
What injury is this? Is this harking back to that one that he kept on having, the kind of hamstring issues?
I think it's a hip.
Didn't appear to be that, although it could be related to it. It, if one part of your body starts falling down, another one tries to hold it up, doesn't it?
So, very true.
Yeah. If only they had Romelu Lukaku in reserve, eh, Chelsea? Mm. Yeah. It'd be interesting this game, I think, because Everton are still yet to really perform in front of their own fans. They keep collapsing in games when they show promise. Although, that said, they beat Chelsea 3-1 at Goodison this season, although the player who was responsible for that is now at Norwich. And they also drew 3-3 with Chelsea at Stamford Bridge. Should have won that game. Took John Terry.
Yeah, that was the classic Everton losing points from a winning position. Though.
So there's still that about Everton, which it creates loads of doubt. But if Chelsea do lack Costa, then they don't have the firepower that would be handy against an Everton defence that does collapse.
Who will he go with, do you think?
I'm wondering if he would go with Remy, given that he seems to be fit and he's got history of having scored against Everton in that 6-3 game at Goodison.
Showed great faith in Traore yesterday when he brought him on instead of Remy for Costa.
Yeah, but I think this is it. It's hard to call this game. Everton desperately need to do something in front of their own fans, and now Chelsea only have the FA Cup as a trophy, which is something to look towards in this season.
Yeah. Wow. Well, they both really need this. I was going to say, who needs this more? But they both do.
Yeah, there you go.
They both do, all right. Lovely. Okay. Give us a Lukaku stat, Greg.
He's never scored against Chelsea since he left the club.
But most of the time he couldn't play because he was on loan, though.
Well, he was on loan at West Brom and Everton, but, you know, last season he didn't score. This season he
hasn't scored
didn't
yet.
Score in those right. games. Everton scored a lot of goals against Chelsea, so.
Michael, what's your take on Roberto Martinez?
I think he's a talented manager, but the organisation of the teams is just consistently really bad.
Right.
And just conceding so many, just conceding silly goals in such a wide variety of ways, which I find frustrating.
In what way is he a talented manager then?
Well, I think he does get the best out of attacking players. I think he's been good for the development of Barkley in particular. I think Lukaku's thrived under him. I think at Wigan he did a good job with some fairly average attackers, and they were often a good counter-attacking threat. But you kind of look for signs of progress that he's kind of learning lessons, and he just seems to be the same manager that he was at Wigan. He doesn't seem to have adapted to the high expectations. You look at where they are, 12th. I mean, assuming Chelsea push on and finish about 6th or 7th, which I think they will, Everton arguably the biggest underachievers of the season, really. I thought they'd be on the edge of the top 6.
Mm. Of course, at Wigan, that special cup final. No?
Yeah.
It's
relegation.
Relegation, but the cup final... I mean, they won.
Yeah.
And they were really good in that game as well, Wigan. Like, it was, I think, 88th minute goal from a set piece, so it kind of feels like a smash and grab. But they completely outplayed City. They were brilliant in that cup final. But for the last 3 months of the Premier League season, they were dreadful.
Yeah. Evertonians I spoke to just think he doesn't show enough interest in the defence. His focus is purely on the gloss and not enough on the kind of meat and veg, if you like.
And I think it's interesting as well, because he's obviously made the jump up from a relatively minor Premier League club at the time to a bigger club. And the managers who have done that, Rodgers, Martinez, Pochettino, have all really emphasised good attacking football. And that's what you have to do with a lesser club to then get the move to a big club. But then he doesn't seem to have adjusted and actually created a proper unit that will pick up points. You know, there's teams that have punched above their weight. Allardyce sides, Pulis sides, they're never going to get a leap to a top club. So it's funny, you kind of almost become typecast as this particular type of manager just by trying to impress the big clubs.
It's an interesting point. Can you think of a manager who has adjusted their game and brought in the kind of solidity that a big club would require?
That's a good question. Maybe not in the Premier League, maybe Allegri in Italy. Would that be a good example when he went to Milan?
But certainly, Juve
did have adapted
their own qualities.
Yeah, well, Mike was saying basically that all the fancy stuff that gets you noticed, you need to temper it a little bit when you get the big
job. I'd say Hughes is doing that at Stoke, right. I'd say.
Which was the fancy stuff? Blackburn Rovers?
Oh, you mean going from fat? Sorry, he's done the opposite.
He's done the opposite.
He's added the fancy
That's
stuff
what you should do.
To the solidity that was already there.
Right. Anyway, just curious. Right. We'll talk more about the other quarterfinals later on in the show, because next up I think we'll have a bit of a chat about the few Premier League games they're having this weekend.
Squaresbury.
Now, not many games in the Premier League this weekend, but luckily the ones that there are do involve teams chasing the title and also teams struggling to leap out of the bottom three. Big game, arguably Monday night, when Leicester take on Newcastle. Their title rivals, Man City, stretching the definition a bit, are going to be at Norwich, who are with Newcastle in the bottom three. And the bottom side, Villa, meanwhile, hosts Spurs, the team in second place. All very interesting. What's going to happen to that five-point lead that Leicester have over Spurs coming into this weekend, Greg?
It's going to be reduced to 2 points.
Really? You think that Newcastle, on the basis that what? A new manager coming in?
I'm talking about Spurs. They played the day before.
I see. Leicester. By and the time, right.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. That Spurs will have put pressure on Leicester because they're playing Aston Villa. So.
Right.
So there's a few games this weekend. That's probably not a game in there. It's not a battle anyway.
It's at Villa,
mm. But that's probably
second
worse.
Second tough away trip in 3 or 4 days for Spurs? Because they've got Dortmund, obviously, this evening.
Yeah, if there's one team you want to face after a very difficult Europa League first leg against the second place team in the Bundesliga, it's a team that have shipped 15 goals in the last four games and look like they're not so much sinking as smashed to bits on the rocks already. So
right.
I guess Spurs can probably afford to rest a few players against Villa and still keep the title challenge on course. Yeah, it's hard to think of things to say about Villa these days.
Let's move on.
Yeah.
Let's move on. What about Norwich Man City? Hey, 1 point since January the 2nd for Norwich. 1 point since January the 2nd.
Yeah, they're in dreadful form. That's kind of gone under the radar, maybe because they're not traditionally big clubs like Newcastle and Sunderland. And they're just playing dreadfully. There's nothing to... You can't really make a case for Norwich staying up. I think Newcastle still have good players. Sunderland have a manager who knows how to get out of trouble, but Norwich are just a kind of nothingy team, really. I mean, Manchester City are weird because they have the best record in the Premier League against the bottom half, and I think the 16th best record against the top half.
Really?
So they're just flat-track bullies, and Norwich are the perfect side for them because, right. They won 3-0 there in the FA Cup in January.
They did.
And you'd expect them to get three goals again, I think.
Well, yeah, although it was 0-0 this fixture last season, on aggregate... the score between them in the last 8 meetings is 29-9.
Okay.
Says producer Ben, who's putting his socks and shoes back on now. Right, so you'd expect, what you're saying is Man City to get at least 3 goals there. So they're going to grab 3 points. Spurs are going to get points, there were 3 of them at Villa Park. What about Leicester as they take on Newcastle? A Newcastle team who have, I believe, the worst goal-scoring form outside of St James's Park, anywhere pretty much in football, anywhere, certainly in the top 4 divisions of English football, only 7 goals scored in, I don't know how many games it is now, but loads. But who's going to be in charge of them? Is it going to be the Benitez effect this Monday night, James?
Well, that's the smart money. But I'd be slightly surprised if we were to take that job. Not completely.
Really?
Well, I mean, it's a huge club. It's a huge club. And the potential is there. And I think they've needed a manager with some organisational ability about him. Someone who can also attract players, get the best out of those players. But I suppose Benitez wouldn't go there unless he would be able to have a big say in recruitment and whether... people like Graham Carl allow him that, I don't know. I think they probably see eye to eye on many of the players that they go looking for. But mentioned, the goal scoring has been disastrous considering some of the moves that they made in January. Mm. Their away form is disastrous.
They've got a more talented squad than that league position suggests, I think. Yeah. If you look at their squad compared to some of the teams who are around them, and that is why the finger's being pointed at McLaren, I suppose. Right. As much as it is turmoil at the club and the way Ashley runs it and, some of their recruitment is being questioned, I think you look at the squad and you think it should be doing better than that.
I think the defence is...
Yeah, the defence is poor, but I mean, they should. The fact that they're not scoring goals when they have players there who are capable of playing very good football.
Not always on the field, though, in McLaren's team selection, that regard. Mm,
but in performances this season in some of the bigger games, they have looked like they should be capable of beating a lot of the teams around them, and then they haven't done so.
Right.
Is that a motivational issue?
Frankie Diamond said the most depressing thing about them, a clueless situation, is that everyone in Newcastle could see it coming apart from Charnley and Carr. Interesting facts, he says, about how useless Pardew has been this year. He's 6 points worse off in 2016 than McLaren. Bizarre, though. I mean, we've been waiting for McLaren to go since the defeat against Bournemouth on Saturday, and he's still there. They're kind of strapped into the gurney but can't find a needle.
Yeah, well, he was due to meet with Charnley, have a face-to-face meeting yesterday, and they just spoke on the phone, and apparently he wasn't given any assurances that he'd be in charge on Monday.
Mm.
So, I mean, it just seems...
He's taken training this morning as well.
Okay. Right. I mean, even if Benitez does come in before Monday, he's not going to have time to do much, I wouldn't have thought.
Also, his track record at Napoli doesn't suggest he'd have any major restorative influence on the defending. No. They were absolute shambles.
Mind you, the defending at Real Madrid... It's good. Although you could put that down to Keylor Navas being brilliant as well.
Yeah, okay. Well, it's a difficult situation for whoever takes on that job. They have this against the league leaders at the King Power Stadium. Then, of course, Sunderland. Ooh, and then Norwich. Wow, that'll be a big game. Anyway, we'll talk about that more when it rolls around. A couple of other games that really don't have that much going on about them. This weekend, for example, Bournemouth-Swansea, because they've both pretty much sewn up their Premier League safes for another year. I think Bournemouth are, 11 points clear now?
Swansea, 9 points.
Well done to the pair of them.
Yeah. I mean, they keep saying, look, we can't get complacent, but given what we've said about the teams down below
get
them...
Get complacent.
No, get complacent.
Get complacent. Yeah. Turn up for work in a tuxedo. Why not? And Stoke... are up against Saints. Hey, Saints, you know, they've gone a little bit off the ball. As you probably spot, they had that six-game winning run, and now they've kind of not been winning as much. But look at Stoke. If they win this game, they would be up in seventh within a point of Man United. Yikes. Do you remember how, like, a week ago, everyone was saying, whoa, do you remember how people were saying Man United weren't going to get into the top four, and now they are? And now everyone's saying that they're not. Yeah,
I mean, Stoke had a bit of a wobble at the start of the season, but they've just got a very good team. You know, you look 1-11, they've got fantastic players, you know, play really good technical football. They've got still a couple of the old guard like Whelan and John Walters who do a good job. They're just a good team, good players.
Excellent.
They brought in a January signing in Bula who has made the difference as well. Not that many January signings take to the game as easily as he's done.
Listener Ben of The Guardian asks, will Hughes and Koeman still be at these clubs next season? And, cheeky fella, he suggests Ronald Koeman for Arsenal. I don't know if you saw, actually, you're at Hull getting, hammered by Arsenal in that cup replay Tuesday night. And the Arsenal fans holding up that banner saying, thanks for the memories, Arsene, but it's time to say goodbye.
Yeah, like Andrea Bocelli.
Yeah.
Well, I think I suppose one of the issues for Arsenal, if those fans, if they want rid of Wenger, is they've kind of missed the boat on so many of the top managers out there, aren't they? Because Klopp's gone.
What about Ronald Koeman then?
Well,
no,
he's not the sexiest.
Well, I mean, is Arsene sexy?
Va-va-voom.
Yeah. Okay.
Is Koeman against? Hughes,
yes.
The managerial battle between the two best players in their careers. Both
in the Premier League. Yeah.
In the Premier League. Both top players, weren't they? Both at Barcelona for a spell.
Right. And I mean, it has been suggested probably by Barney Rona in the past that if games end in a tie, that they should get the managers out to do the penalty shootout. And were that to have ever taken place, then, you know, your point would have been extra valid. But it's still an interesting one, Michael. I'm trying to think who else was a good player out there than the other managers. Who else we got?
Pochettino?
Remy Gard.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Martinez in his days at Wigan.
I suppose. Of course, next season you'll have Pep to factor in. Mm-hmm. Right. Oh, and Conte.
Yeah. Bilic was an international, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. All right, listeners. Yes, I'll move on. Harry Hauk. Oh, this is a change of topic. Says, who is your early MLS favourite? Michael, you've been. What did you make of the opening weekend in North America? Do you not watch MLS?
I'm going to go with New York City.
Are you?
Yeah.
On the basis of James?
Andrea Pirlo.
Oh, right. Yeah. But I thought he'd been struggling a little bit.
Yeah, he has.
For all his fine work Andrea making Pirlo. Goal line clearances, he hasn't.
Yeah.
Well, he's good at directing goalkeepers for penalties as well. Yeah. Have you seen this?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So that's. Yeah. Good on defending set pieces, I guess.
Do you. How many. I'll just go over this one more time. You watch how many games a weekend?
I don't know, five or six.
Okay,
maybe.
But yeah. Not MLS.
No, I would do, but I didn't. I didn't on the opening weekend.
Right, we've only had one weekend, so
yeah, I didn't see those matches, I'm afraid.
Okay, all right.
Yeah,
all right. Greg, have you got an early MLS favourite?
Portland Timbers.
Right,
hipster's favourite.
Current
reigning champions.
Hmm. I mean, Giovinco MVP, isn't it?
There you go. Lovely.
Giovinco will be taking his team all the way to the top.
Toronto.
Tonto.
A quick mention for the major victory won by that campaign, 20 is Plenty. I say victory, 20 is Plenty is what the campaign was, but it's actually £30 that away tickets have been price capped as by by the Premier League for the next three seasons. But it's a major development, that. No, there's been a bit of movement on ticket prices, actually, both home, you know, season tickets and that, and these away tickets after the recent furore. A lot of big clubs announcing price freezes or even subsidising tickets and dropping tickets, yeah.
It's about bloody time, isn't it?
Well, it is, Greg. But, you know, still, well done for finally waking up to that one.
I think Stoke have frozen their home ticket for years, haven't they?
I believe it's 5 years they offer an early bird special. I could do with an early bird special. Yeah. But anyway, if you sign up early for a season ticket, you get, you know, so it's effectively for the early signer uppers, it's still the same prices as 5 years ago. And when you think of how the value of their squad and the quality of the football on offer at the Britannia has, you know, effectively been transformed, that's quite a remarkable bargain.
Yeah.
I don't know what other options there are for a Saturday afternoon in Stoke, but you've got to think that's a competitive offer. Anyway, what's that, Ben? All right, well, we'll finish part two there, and then we'll come on to, the FA Cup quarterfinals.
Hello, and welcome to another day of export opportunity. UK education is respected globally, and the world wants to learn from us. If you provide educational services, training or technology, there are many opportunities for you. To find yours, visit exportingisgreat.gov.uk.
Hey, Michael, Kike Sanchez-Flores. If the conversation was which Premier League manager had the best footballer as a godfather, that's your answer.
Yeah, that's quite a specific question.
Yeah.
But that would be the answer, yeah.
He's got your beard, Jimbo.
Who has?
Kike Sanchez-Flores.
He's got a lot more than my beard.
Well, it's got those...
He's got it going on as Kike
Sanchez-Flores. Salt and pepper tones to it, yeah.
Yeah, he's
the Hertfordshire heartthrob.
Yeah, well.
Right. James, you just come back from Dublin, it says on this piece of paper.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah? What were you doing? A blizzard event there?
I was, yeah. Yeah.
How did that go?
It went really well.
All right. What was the highlight for you? Because who was on? You were on with Jonathan Wilson.
Yeah, they laughed. They laughed at his anecdotes.
Oh, yeah, were they? He's got some funny anecdotes. Yeah.
He's not sound surprised.
Who else was on?
Mr. Auclair.
Philippe Auclair.
Oh, yeah.
Did they laugh at his anecdotes?
Yes. Although Philippe gets very serious about, you know, FIFA and UEFA and... Yeah, things
Ronaldo,
like that.
Yeah.
Pogba.
Other issues.
Pogba, yeah.
Pogba.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did he wear a funny jumper, though?
Did Philippe wear a funny jumper? Not that I remember. He was just doing the cryptic crossword.
Was he?
Yeah. And he designed a football one, which was very, very difficult.
Okay. Listeners, if you're thinking, God, a football night out with chat and stuff, and maybe the odd laugh or two in Dublin, that sounds great. Of course... It just occurs to me that we're going to be there in a couple of, well, a little bit less than 2 weeks. 22nd of March, we're going to be at Vicar Street. Not many tickets left. It's a big venue. If you want one, get along to ticketmaster.ie. Oh, and by the way, if you purchased your ticket for the previous venue, don't worry. Your ticket will get you into Vicar Street. And we'll be sending you an email, both of you, about the switcheroo. Lovely. Hey, now at last, we can turn our attentions, Greg. To the FA Cup quarterfinals. I know we did this a bit anyway in part one with Chelsea Everton. And we also mentioned the fact that, Arsenal are going to be featuring in it because they beat Hull 4-0 in that replay. By the way, better news on the injury front for Arsenal, I believe.
Ramsey out for 6 weeks. No.
That might be better news for the obituary columns, though, because Mr. Gareth E. flagging up the fact that yet again he's causing yet again.
Oh, no.
World names, go a-tumbling. I looked this up, and the list of names after he scores is extraordinary. But as he says, it's not funny, and he doesn't want to talk about it. So we'll move on. But anyway, so yeah, he's out. But Gabriel and Mertesacker, who are so invaluable, should apparently be all right now, I'm hearing.
But they're still without Cech.
Yeah.
Koscielny's missed the last couple of games. Will he be back?
Don't know. Oxlade-Chamberlain, Santi Cazorla, Jack Wilshere. They still play for Arsenal, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although Ox has been subject to interest from Pep's Man City, apparently. Given that Pep was meeting Chicky Baguristain in Amsterdam.
Really? What role, Michael, would you see Oxlade-Chamberlain filling in Manchester City's team?
The British role, probably.
Oh.
I don't know. I don't really understand that link, to be honest.
He'd probably be right back under Pep, wouldn't he? You know,
back or something. That.
Yeah, some bizarre new creation.
It's funny with that Arsenal injury list. I think at the moment they've got a goalkeeper out, 4 defenders, 5 midfielders, and it's like they're just lacking that top class striker.
Yeah.
But Giroud did score twice against Hull. He's got his first goals for a couple of months. So.
Oof. Hull, they were taken apart there.
Yeah, they got bigger fish to fry, like the Championship.
Well, that's true. That's true. Anyway, Arsenal are going to be taking on Watford on Sunday. And are we on for the three-peat in FA Cup terms, are we? Arsenal?
Well, I think...
that's Blackburn them winning Rovers. The FA Cup three times in a row.
Yes. Yeah. First time since Blackburn Rovers in, 1886 or something like that, which is an achievement in itself. And... you know, perhaps would be a good time to say goodbye from Arsene Wenger's
point of view. Interesting. Let me throw two stats your way. One's a fact, and one's a stat. It's the fact that the Gunners beat Watford 3-0 in October. But how about this? The Hornets haven't beaten Arsenal since 1987.
Is that in the FA Cup quarterfinals?
I think that's
true. But see, I mean, they've got Agallo scored 1 in 10. In 2016, the goals have kind of dried up. They managed to stay in games, keep them close, as we saw against United and against Leicester. And then a piece of individual brilliance has kind of been their undoing. But I mean, they've got some injuries as well, particularly I think it's centre back Britos went off the other day, so Aki had to come and play centre back. Did really well. I would say, you know, they're able to stay in games long, but after the 3-0 defeat they suffered to Arsenal in the first half of the season, when that was one of probably Arsenal's best performances of the campaign, it could be quite difficult. Although this week is going to be quite a challenge for Arsenal. When you think they played Hull, that was a replay, so had a pile up in an already congested fixture list. I think after this game, they go obviously fly to Barcelona, and then they come back, and they're probably not going to have time to train, just rest, and then they've got to play Everton in Liverpool. So it's quite a crunch time, particularly with all these players out.
Absolutely.
This is the exciting thing about the FA Cup this season, I think. Like you look at the teams that are left in it, and apart from Arsenal, and some Arsenal fans who hold up angry banners may disagree, all the other teams have only got the FA Cup to go for. Arsenal have still got the league. And you know, that makes these games seem quite important, and they may actually be exciting.
Yeah. FA Cup quarterfinals in quite important, shocker, says Greg Bukowski.
Well, yeah.
I bet you're looking at Reading Palace when you say that. Look at that.
I am.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know what? There'll be no complacency from Palace in this at all. Pardew has got, you know, rich history with Palace in the FA Cup, and he nodded them to Wembley in 1990, and he could add to his cult hero status by, guiding them there again to a semi-final.
Right.
And imagine, you know, Palace, one of the most raucous sets of fans in the Premier League, taking that lot to Wembley for a semi-final and possibly a final. They could be, you know, dark horses for the Cup.
Well, they won, of course, their fifth run tie away at White Hart Lane, of all places. Their raucous fans will be vying in volume terms with the incredibly raucous fans of Reading at the Medeski Stadium. But they're not doing that well in the Championship, the Roz, but they have been having a fantastic cup run.
They have, yeah. I mean, they just seem to come to life in the cup. Mm. Last season they got to the semi-final, they beat West Brom this season. Perhaps West Brom took it, maybe a little bit complacent. But yeah, I think McDermott's actually steadied the ship a bit at Reading. I know they lost the last game against Huddersfield, but before that they hadn't. They haven't lost in five, and they have seen an improvement. Palace have fallen off a cliff somewhat under Pardew, and I don't think, a lot of people saying they could be looking over the shoulder at the relegation teams, I don't think that's the case.
They're 9 points clear, no?
Yeah, yeah, and the season now hinges on this to provide a bit of joy for the fans who maybe thought they were going to be doing what West Ham have done and bothering the top four just, you know, 2 months ago or so. So yeah, I think this could be a decent game. It's a Friday night under the lights fixture at the Majeski. So, yeah.
All right, I'm fired up for that. I thought you were going to say the big game was Man United West Ham, because that's, I mean, they're the form that West Ham are in. Also, Man United, I mean, tonight they play at Anfield. We talked about this game and the other Europa League ties in the last couple of pods. And by the time this one comes out, they'll be done and dusted. But that's—I mean—you must be so excited, Greg, for that.
I am very excited. Yeah, it's just such a bizarre fixture in the last 16 of the Europa League. But two legs against United is something to savour. And listeners will probably already know what's happened.
Yeah.
As I speak, biting my fingernails here.
Are you? All right. We're thinking actually for that very reason of moving. Next week's podcast to accommodate the second the return leg of that. Wow. What do you think about that, listeners?
Wow.
And Spurs Dortmund, of course. Yeah. Wow. The power of the Europa League. It's the coming force in European football. Anyway, back to the quarterfinals of the FA Cup, he said, having received blank looks for that statement. Man United taking on West Ham. Liam Rosengren says, I hate doing the please talk about my club bit, but please talk about my club. He's a West Ham fan. So, yeah, I mean, Mike, you'd fancy them in this, wouldn't you?
I think it'll be a close game. West Ham have been very good away at big sides in the Premier League this year. And United could be the kind of team that plays into West Ham's hands. They like to have lots of the ball, Manchester United this is, and push forward a lot, push their fullbacks forward. And West Ham like to play on the break. So it could, it could be set up for a good win. I remember when West Ham won at Old Trafford that time with Di Canio, that being a really good West Ham performance.
Right.
Can imagine something similar happening here.
Okay, it was 0-0 there the last time they visited Old Trafford. That was in the league. But Hammers actually have the best form in the entire top division. They've just actually moved past Man United with their victory at the weekend. So that come-from-behind win against Everton. What do you think, James?
Well, I agree with Michael about West Ham's great results away at big sides, but also United have this really maddeningly sort of trend of managing to win games you least expect them to win.
Oh.
And I think you know, perhaps given West Ham's form, you probably wouldn't expect them to win this game, but maybe United will.
West Ham have lots of players who come. They've had a lot of injury issues through. That's one of the remarkable things about how well they've done. That it's been done despite the injuries, but a lot of those players coming back.
Yeah, the likes of Winston Reid. Enver Valencia and Victor Moses, and I think Tompkins will be back for the Chelsea match as well. So, yeah, that gives them a lot of hope going into that run-in that they can maybe still challenge Man City for a place in the top four.
Wow. It's remarkable, isn't it? There they are. They're just 1 point off the Champions League positions at the moment. Man City, though, do have that game in hand, which is against Newcastle.
That's the one. Well, yeah. But they've certainly got the form to maybe get the likes of Arsenal and that looking over their shoulders.
All right.
There could be four London teams in the semi-finals of the FA Cup. And conceivably, if West Ham were to finish in the top four, three London clubs in their four Champions League places.
Right. Vindication for the FA and their decision to hold the semi-finals at Wembley.
Yeah, exactly.
Bingo. Slaven Bilic, do you know when West Ham's season started? Do you remember back at the start of this campaign?
Yeah. July?
Yeah, July? 2nd of July. Yeah. 2nd of July.
That is early.
Yeah, an early start for their Europa League campaign and an early finish for it as well. But, boy, they've been playing for a long time. Hmm. Anyway, what do you think, Greg? Call it for us. Man United, West Ham.
1-1.
And a replay.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay. We're looking forward to all of those. We'll be out on Monday with all of that. I'm not going to go, though, before we've talked a little bit about Italy, James. Italy. If there's anything else you guys want to talk about as well, we can do that too. But I do want to mention, I'm back on the Sunday night's Euro special, and we'll be rounding up all the goals and stuff, and doing Palermo-Napoli, which is especially exciting because Napoli, of course, 3 points behind Juve in that Serie A title race. Juve are up against Sassuolo, which is a game that posed them problems in the past.
Yeah, it was the last team that beat them in Serie A and was the real low point in their season, seen as the turning point.
Right.
Because they realised that they couldn't let the season get any further away from them, and then they went on that incredible winning streak.
Indeed. Anyway, so possibly problems for them there. Napoli are at Palermo, and they certainly have had problems. Shall we run through this again? So Iachini started as their manager. He lasted 12 games. Then Ballardini came in for 7. Then they had Fabio Viviani for 1, which they lost 4-0 against Genoa. Then Giovanni Bosi came in. He had 1 game, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Right, 4-1 against Udinese. Yeah. That was a victory.
Uh-huh.
But they still got rid of him.
Well, the problem is with Viviani, Bosi and Tedesco,
right,
is that they were all kind of, not interim managers, but they were... Schelotto, figure, was supposed to be in charge.
Right.
So,
well, he came in then afterwards for 3 games, but didn't have a permit, so then he went. Tedesco came in for how many games? Not many. Then they went back to Bosi again, and then they got rid of him and went back to Iachini. But this week, what's happened now?
Sack Iachini.
Right. Wait, yeah. Didn't he actually resign?
Well, he did, because after the defeat to Inter at San Siro on Sunday night... Well, before that game, Zamperini said, look, for the love of God, I'm not going to be sacking any more managers. We've done it enough this season. And Iachini will be in charge until the end. And then after that defeat, he basically couldn't keep his mouth shut and basically said, look, yeah, he plays really bad football and we're going to get beaten 5-0 by Napoli next Sunday. And Iachini was like, come on, this is a huge attack on my dignity. So he decided to resign.
What did he expect when he went back there? I mean, he must know what.
Well, he resisted the calls to go back after this is the other thing. Iachini was sacked in the first place after being given a must-win game, which he won and was sacked.
Mm.
Ballardini was also sacked after being given a must-win game, which he also won.
Mm.
But he wasn't really sacked by Zamperini. The goalkeeper and captain, Stefano Sorrentino, he sacked Ballardini.
Now, Ballardini, he sacked him by effectively coming out and saying, we're not playing for him. Is that right?
Yeah, that we did all the pre-match preparation. Right. I did the talk in the dressing room before the game and at halftime, and we won, so we don't need him.
Right. Now, they're up to their 8th managerial change of this season.
Yeah.
And I'm looking for double figures, really, from Palermo. But anyway, they're on 8th at the moment. Ballardini was asked, and he said, I'll only come back if you fire goalkeeper Sorrentino.
Yes, yeah. And also, I think a lot of the players who were in revolt when Iachini got the sack in the first place just didn't want him back. And it would be impossible for him to go back. Although Zamperini did try and bring him back. Also tried to get... Giovanni Trapattoni, who's a spring chicken, as we all know. He basically spent all Monday afternoon trying to convince Iachini not to resign. And then he went on a radio show and basically called him an idiot who doesn't understand it, doesn't understand why, you know, when he basically comes up to Iachini and says, go on, sort this team out. Mm. He doesn't take the criticism. Just basically continued to say, oh, he makes our team play really bad, and then expected him to sort of, you know, withdraw his resignation.
Well, you saw them play against Inter last weekend. Did they play really bad?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
They are up against Napoli. Who's coming in? Who's going to be sitting on the bench for that?
It's Novellino.
Walter Novellino.
Yeah.
Wow.
But we don't know how long he'll last.
So. We certainly don't.
Are these managers being paid off?
Well, some are on retainer still. But I actually think when they sacked Iachini the first time around, they did actually sack him. And so he was actually due on Monday to go in and talk and sign a new contract, which he then basically didn't.
Right. How old is Zamperini now?
I think he's in his
70s. He's in his 70s, isn't he?
Because that's what Iachini said. He was like, look, I don't want to get into an argument with a 70-year-old man who's basically lost the plot.
Well, I was just going to say, it does... I mean, Zamperini's always been a bit this way, but it does feel like this season he might actually... I don't want to make insinuations, but tenuous grasp and all that. Right. Anyway, anything else you want to mention about Italian football?
Only that Buffon is 93 minutes away from breaking the Sebastiano Rossi's record for goals and minutes without games and minutes without conceding a goal, which has stood since 93-94. So that's an incredible achievement, because it's not all down to the goalkeeper. You have to get a bit lucky, and your defenders have to do well as well. So.
Yeah. When they tally up these things, do they include, say, for example, the game against Sassuolo this weekend has 8 minutes of time added on at the end. Will that count as 98 minutes, or is it just 90 for a game?
I think it's just 90 minutes. So the likelihood is he'll need another 3 minutes when they play Torino at the derby,
Right.
But as we said, Sassuolo, very good. They're the giant killers, the Amata Grandi in Serie A.
Top word, James. Italy. Thanks anyway for being with us today, Greg and James and Michael and producer Ben. Enjoy your weekend full of diverse footballing delight, and we'll see you back here on Monday, listeners. Bye.